Hello and welcome back to the History of the British Isles podcast. This is episode 48, The Life, Times and Impact of Emma of Normandy. As you may have guessed from the title, today's episode is a patron-requested special episode about the life of Emma of Normandy. Finding sources for this episode was hard, but I was able to get a few together and I hope their content will suffice to provide a detailed biography of our subject. Before we begin, however, I would like to remind you all to follow me on Twitter, where at BritishHistPod, and join the community Discord server. I'll link both of those in this episode's description. Anyways, if you want to support the show monetarily, either you could make a monthly donation via Patreon, which nets you a few benefits, or make a one-off donation via PayPal. I'll link both of those in this episode's description. I'd also like to remind you that I'm doing a Q&A for my 50th episode, and your questions would be much appreciated. You can email me those at historyofbritishisles@gmail.com, or use any of the other social networks I'm on. Now, let's get on with the episode. Emma of Normandy was characterised by what worth she had to other people. She was born with a Norman identity mixed with a Danish identity from her mother, and over time developed an Anglo-Saxon identity. She was the daughter of Duke Richard I of Normandy and his Danish wife Gunnor, or Gunnora. She was the sister of the future Duke Richard II of Normandy, as well as Archbishop Robert of Rouen. This made her the great-aunt of William the Conqueror, and also the genealogical basis for his claim to the English throne. Emma's date of birth is unknown, but the first reference to her eldest son, Edward the Confessor, is from 1005. This means she couldn't have been younger than 12 or much older than 20 at the time of her marriage. The Anglo-Saxon Chronicle refers to her first public appearance with her youngest son, Harthacnut, in 1023, meaning that at that point she was unlikely to have been over 40. All this means that she was probably born during the 980s, with the latest possible year being 995. However, I'd consider the latter extremely unlikely because she wouldn't have been older than 7 at the time of her marriage to Aethelred. As I've said, that took place in 1002. We've talked a bit about why Aethelred married Emma back in episode 28 and 29, but it's useful to consider at Emma's own appeal rather than the mere desire Aethelred had to stop the Normans from harbouring Viking raiders. As I mentioned at the beginning, Emma was characterised by what worth she had to people. Emma probably didn't have much of a say in the marriage negotiations. To Aethelred, she was a half Norman, half Dane. This linked into the people who were raiding him and the people who were facilitating the raiding. To Richard I, the marriage let him achieve new heights of political power by tying him to a major kingdom, while also giving him a foothold in English politics, which were later to be exploited by William the Conqueror. Emma got a few benefits from the marriage too, though it's unlikely she got any better of a deal than she would have got with any number of powerful monarchs. Aethelred granted to a major stake over cities such as Exeter and Winchester, as well as lands both in the surrounding areas and the North East Midlands. This made Emma a powerful woman in her own right. Emma and Aethelred had three children together: Edward, the future Edward the Confessor, Alfred and Gugifu. Though both Edward and Alfred were far down the line of succession on account of the sons Aethelred had previously had from his first marriage, they still became Aethelings and were thus technically possible candidates for the throne. Emma adopted a native English identity, taking the name Elfgifu. This emulated other powerful English queens, such as Saint Elfgifu, mother of both King Edwig and Edgar the Peaceable. This, along with both of her sons being Aethelings, cemented Emma's legitimacy. This is demonstrated in her being named as Regina, or Queen, in the charters regarding her son's birth. However, things were not all good for Emma. Her stepsons resented the potential rivalry Edward and Alfred posed. Even worse, Aethelred was an awful king, and Aethelred, along with Emma and his sons, were forced into exile at the court of Richard I due to an invasion by King Sweyn Thorbjörn of Denmark and Norway. However, Aethelred was able to return to power for a few years before dying in 1016. This left Emma as a widow. However, the fight was not over for control of England. Aethelred's heir, Edmund Ironside, and Sweyn's son, Cnut, were still to get out. On the 18th of October 1016, Cnut defeated Edmund at the Battle of Ashington. This led to Cnut and Edmund dividing England between the two of them. Edmund ended up being assassinated in November, allowing Cnut to seize control of the entirety of England by the end of 1016. What this meant for Emma was a new marriage, this time to Cnut. It seems that Emma fell into Cnut's hands by force. Danish skalds, poets, and contemporary sources tell us of Cnut possibly kidnapping Emma or abducting her against her will. In 1017, after he had already been crowned King of England, Cnut demanded that, and I quote, the widow of the dead king to be brought to him. The wedding itself took place later in 1017. Part of the marriage treaty stipulated that the succession to the English throne would continue through Emma's children with Cnut, over either her children with Aethelred or Cnut's children with his first wife. This was a pretty generous concession, so it's important to wonder why Cnut basically made certain that his territory would be divided among his sons. Well, Emma's identity had evolved from that of a Norman to that of a popular Anglo-Saxon queen. This is partially due to the adoption of the name Elfgifu. This associated her with Anglo-Saxon ideals and culture. Cnut marrying Emma linked him to that identity and also probably helped dissuade his subjects from rebelling. The Norman or Danish identity probably wasn't as important to Cnut as it was to Aethelred. Anyways, Emma had two children with Cnut, a son, Harth Cnut, in 1018 and a daughter, Gunhild, in 1020. Emma also probably had more political power than she did under Aethelred. She's far more prominent in charters than she was during the reign of Aethelred. This was probably the result of her trying to entrench her position and trying to ensure that she would continue to be powerful after the death of Cnut. Speaking of that, of the death of Cnut, that happened in 1035. Unfortunately, Harold Harefoot, one of Cnut's sons from his first marriage, was the only prince in England. Harth Cnut was off in Denmark acting as regent. However, he didn't even have complete power there. We've got to remember that Harth Cnut was only 17 and inexperienced. He shared his duty in Denmark with a few other of Cnut's loyalist courtiers. Emma herself still sat at the heart of power in Winchester and had control over Cnut's household, including his military retinue and the royal treasures. From 1035 to 1036, Emma acted on those assets and held the throne in Harth Cnut's name. She moved from using the title Regina, meaning queen, to Mater Regis, or mother, or queen mother. Her power didn't completely divide from her son, however. As we talked about earlier, Emma was a powerful woman in her own right. His estates all over southern England and the Midlands. In 1036, her sons with Aethelred invaded England to claim the throne. Alfred was captured and killed, but it seems Edward was able to get up to his mother in Winchester before being forced to flee. Judging by Edward's later actions towards his mother, it's likely Emma wasn't all that helpful for him. In 1037, Harold banished Emma and was crowned King of England. Emma went into exile in Flanders, and were later to be joined by her son, Harth Cnut, and a large Danish fleet. It's likely that they planned to invade England. However, they wouldn't have to. Harold died in 1040, and Harth Cnut came to the throne. It's at this point where Emma was at the height of her power. In 1041, Edward seems to have been associated in some way to the throne, possibly indicating a trinity of royal power. Emma herself began to focus on her own legacy. She commissioned the Encomium Emma Regiae, a history focused on enshrining her and Cnut's lineage. On the front page of the Encomium, Emma is portrayed with her sons rather than either of her husbands, indicating the change in her portrayal of her power. She was no longer queen, but the mother of kings. This was probably mainly done so Emma would remain powerful and relevant. The Encomium also tries to portray an image of family togetherness, as shown with the following quote. The mother and both sons, having no disagreement between them, enjoyed the ready amenities of the kingdom. Here there is loyalty among the sharers of rule. Here the bond of motherly and brotherly love is of strength. However, all this hides a disparity between the children she had with Cnut and those she had with Aethelred. William of Malmesbury treats Emma with disdain for abandonment of her children with Aethelred, writing about Emma that long had she mocked her offspring's years of need. The Encomium praised Cnut and basically annoyed Aethelred, further emphasising this bias. However, from Emma's perspective, she saw her children with Cnut as the most likely way of continuing her lineage. She was successful in aligning herself with Harthacnut, no matter how posterity views her for that. If he was able to extend his dynasty even a generation further, it's likely Emma would be facing a lot less criticism. Harthacnut died in 1042, and Edward claimed the throne. Emma had bet on the wrong horse, and her own decline in power was tied to Harthacnut's death. Angry at how he'd been treated by his own mother, Edward confiscated all her lands and wealth, leaving her with only enough to survive. In 1044, Edward allowed her to return to court, but she never exercised as much power as she had done during the reign of Harthacnut. Emma probably spent the rest of her life in retirement, in Winchester. However, there's a few references to her after 1045. She died on the 6th of March 1052 and was buried in the Old Minster alongside Cnut. I'm sorry this episode is a bit shorter than usual. I got what I could from the sources I had available. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever else you can. It really helps the podcast grow. Plus, each positive comment makes me just a bit happier. Also, please remember to follow me on Twitter, where I'm at @PreciousPod, and join the community Discord server. I'll link both of those in this episode's description. And with that, please consider donating to the show. You can either make a one-off donation through PayPal or a monthly donation through Patreon. If you have any questions you want to ask me, I'll be answering them in the Q&A at episode 50, so please send them in. My email is historyofbritishisles@gmail.com, but you can also send me via any platform you want. Seeing as this is a special episode and I just got my Patreon-funded pop filter, I think all patrons deserve a thank you. On the $2.50 gentleman/woman tier, a thank you to Luke Baxter and Judy Lapp. We also have a new $5 old woman tier patron, Emily Frias, so an extra big thank you to Emily. We also have our $10 Duke/Duchess tier patrons, Anita Gardoni and Stephen Reinish. A big thank you to all of you for supporting the show and helping me make it. Now, goodbye, and thank you all for listening.